This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenated radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins to keep a sense of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Lisa?
I can feel it. It's working.
Excellence. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. All right.
Excellent.
So we are back. This is the Freedom Fiends. I am Jeremy, joined tonight by Lisa, who hasn't been here in forever. What's up, Lisa?
I've had bad audio problems for a long time, and they're still not right, but I will manage. I'll do the best I can.
Yeah. Persevere. And
I'm trying. It well, feels like the radio gods are working against me.
Yes. I long thought I was being punished by the just the audio gods in general. So I know that feeling. I understand that. But it's good to have you back, right? You know.
Thank you. It's good to be back. I feel like a new person again.
I know. I feel like I haven't talked to you in forever, and now as we're closing in towards the end of the year, it's like it's almost going to be 2 years that you and I have been around these quote unquote halls. So, you know.
That's true. Time flies.
I know, right?
I was on the website earlier today, and I was looking for a particular episode, and you know, just going back, wow, it's been that long, huh?
Yeah, I know. Like I said that so nonchalantly, but as I was saying it, I'm like, oh my god, it really has been almost 2 years since we've been.
Yeah.
You know, and
go for figure.
Somebody for besides before my company came along, 2 years was a really long commitment for me to do anything. So
know, it still is for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I got my kids now, I guess, you know, I got that commitment. But yeah, other than that, 2 years is still a really long time for me.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I've been at my job about 5.5 years, and I cannot believe that. Like, that's a long time.
I know, right? And it's like, it's weird, because it feels like forever, but then, of course, in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that long. And then, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Is that actually pathetic that I can't hold on to things for that long? No, let's not dwell on that part of it. Let's just deal with what we got going on.
No, I think it's a creative person thing. I don't think it's a negative thing. I think creative people, you know, only get bored and need to do new things. So.
Well, yeah, I'll run with that excuse. I mean, when I was told, you know, when I was much, much younger and my two grandmothers used to fight over what my issues were. One of them used to, they used to, I heard about this later on, that they used to have conversations. And my one grandmother, my dad's mom, who was always a lot more strict on me, used to complain that I was such a destructive child. And my mom's mom, my Nana, would look at her and go, oh, Addie, you're so silly. He's not destructive. He's just a little boy. He's being constructive. And then my grandmother, then they would look across the room as I was literally pulling something apart at the seams. And my grandmother would just go, constructive, huh? Okay, Dolores, you're insane. So, you know, but yeah, that need to explore things. I hid behind, as soon as I heard that, I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's exactly what my problem is.
Right. Well, you have to deconstruct before you can.
Exactly. That's the way I look at it.
Right. I mean, like, and that is what boys do. So.
Yes.
Some girls. I don't want to get in trouble here.
Yes. I dare you be sexist.
I'm afraid to say anything these days.
Oh, I'm still not. I obviously haven't learned my lesson.
You just put it out there. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, like what? Like at this point, does it really matter? I mean, I already have enough people that hate me. You know, I had that before everything that happened earlier this year. Anyway, so like, I've always had my share of haters. To me, it really just doesn't matter. I'm just like, I'm just gonna go out and say whatever I have to say anyway, until somebody somehow finds some way to actually shut me up. I think I'm just going to keep going.
Why not? I mean, it's, you know, they say if you don't have people getting angry at you, you're doing something wrong, right? So I've heard.
Yeah. Again, that's one of those things, whether it's true or not, I run with it. 'Cause I'm like, it fits my narrative. So let's go with that.
I'm I'm just going to put this out there and see what happens.
I may actually be a complete idiot, and everybody may actually hate me for a very good reason. But you know what? I'm just going to hide behind the fact that, oh, I must be doing something right.
That's your story, and you're sticking to it.
Exactly. It's like the people. It's like I've come across some people that use, like, you know, what is it? If you're drawing that much ire, you must be over the target. Think the same type of idea, basically. And like some of the people that I hear say that, it's like, oh no, you really do have some of the most horrible ideas I've ever heard. No, they really hate you for a very good reason. But they're still going to hide behind it, because, you know, that's what happens with cliches. Anybody can use them.
True.
Any hoodle. So it is good to have you back. And speaking of being back, you have just returned from, well, I guess recently, right, from Anarchon this past weekend, right?
Yeah, got back Sunday. So it rained pretty much all of Friday and Saturday, but it was still fun. It's nice to meet like-minded people. I got to meet Shane, our fellow co-host Shane.
Oh yes, that's right.
Yeah, so that was really nice, and yeah, it was a good time. It was a really good time.
That's good. Yeah, for anybody who hasn't been following along, I know Shane talked about it last week before he left, but Anarchon is what? It's down in Virginia area, you guys?
Yeah, in the mountains.
Yes.
It's pretty rustic.
Yeah, Shane was reading from the website last week, because I guess it was last year we had Cal Molinay on the Seeds of Liberty, my other podcast, and he had talked about it. I was like, oh, that sounds like a really good idea. And then he said what it was, and I was like, oh, that's just not going to work for me, because that's like usually during one of my busy seasons. And then this year came around, and I had already had it in my head that I was, you know, skipping Pork Fest, and I was definitely going to Michigan, because they held them at the same time this year. But I wanted to try to make at least another festival type thing this year, because, you know, I did the two the year before, and I was like, oh, I definitely want to try to do another one. And then when everything happened and I decided that I was going to be shutting down my business, I'm like, oh, great, I'm going to have the last couple of months free. I could definitely do something. And then I found out that, like, Anarchon was like this past week, and I was like, oh, come on. You can't wait like another month. If you wait another month, my business will be shut down and I'll be free to travel. And she's like, oh no, not gonna work out, because of course Labor Day weekend is usually, although of course this year wasn't as crazy as it has been, but normally this is one of my most swamped weekends of the year.
That makes sense. I mean, with it being the last holiday weekend of the summer,
you know, exactly,
school starts for a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, I it was good that it was Labor Day weekend, because you had that extra day. But on the other hand, I would have preferred it to have been a little later, you know, maybe in the fall, just because the rain.
Was it still too? Yeah. Well, I mean,
it was cold. I was gonna say,
temperature-wise, that's always the trick, because, you know, it's like if you go too late to try to miss some of the wetter weather, then yeah, you end up, it's even colder, and then only crazy people like me want to be outside. People who actually have like a 20 below sleeping bag that I've had for years. For no other reason, just because it looked cool when I first got it. I never planned on sleeping in anything that cold.
I certainly wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, I have limits, you know, on both sides. But putting up a tent in the dark in the rain was, like they say, if what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So that was fun. It was worth it. I want to go next year too. It was fun. That's my first festival I've ever been to. My first Liberty event. I always miss them, because they're far away, or something happens, something comes up. So I finally made it to one, so it's kind of a big deal for me.
Yeah, that's well, I'm glad you were finally able to make it. Yeah, you were supposed to come to Pork Fest last year with us, right?
And then I know, I was.
Your kids happened, and then. I know how that happens. I mean, I almost missed Michigan last year, because both my kids, it was only because I just so desperately needed the vacation, that after everything that had been happening in my personal life, with my ex and I splitting up, and the, you know, bad blood between us, and me not seeing my kids, and it was just like, I really want to spend time with my kids, but I so need to get away. I'm still going. Sorry, girls. You know, one of you's got a broken foot, the other one's sick. Yeah, daddy and the dog, we're still going.
Yeah, I needed to get away too. It was nice. It's finally, I don't know, things have calmed down here. The kids are older, and I can have somewhat of a life outside now, sometimes. Well, my son went away to college, and so I have the empty nest syndrome now. you know, where I've had at least one kid with me for 25 years. This is the first time in 25 years I've not had a kid living with me. It's weird.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's really weird. I don't know what to do with myself. I guess I could go to the gym more often or go to yoga. I don't know. Something.
Oh, that's right. Well, I remember talking about this with you at one point before, because isn't that the thing? Like, you can't have pets in your place because that's one of the problems, right?
I can't. Because my daughter wants me to take her cats, and I'm like, I can't. She said, can't you just hide them in a room somewhere so your landlord doesn't know?
Just hide them.
Hide cats? How?
Well, see, I was at first I was going to say, yeah, how can you? And then I thought about it for a second. I'm like, no, actually, I know plenty of people who have done that. I mean, I have my one crazy sister, the actress, who's actually hidden her cats on planes and snuck them in.
Wow. Okay, that's...
She managed to stuff two of her cats, one of whom is a very, very large Russian blue, managed to shove them both in the same carrier one time and convince the people at the airport that she only had one cat because they wanted to charge her for two. And,
how? This is one cat. It has two heads and eight legs.
I don't know.
Two tails.
Listen, she's the actress. People think she's pretty. I mean, I'm sure she batted her eyes at the guys and they're just like, oh, okay, whatever. just go on through. But it worked. But yeah, and I've had other people who've hidden animals before too. So it is possible, but it's frustrating. It's quite annoying. And why would you want to do that? So I can understand that. But yeah, that's usually how most people I know try to combat that empty nest thing. They're just like, oh,
I start accumulating animals.
Yes.
Maybe I'll get like a chameleon or a fish tank or something. I probably can have fish, maybe. They probably, you know. Fish either.
I don't know. I don't know your particular place, but usually apartments or any place like that has those rules set up, it's usually like... I find that usually like caged animals are okay. So like if you have like little small animals, like, you know, a hamster, which I would not recommend because they are of the devil. One of the few animals on this planet I hate with a passion. I think I might have told this story on the show before, but yeah.
Yeah, I have a hamster story too.
Oh, well, all right. We'll get to those when we come back for the market. But if you're gonna go reptiles, get a water dragon. Those things are awesome.
Don't they bite?
No, they're sweet as all get out. But we'll talk more about animals and if they bite or not when we get back.
Listening to Freedom Fans with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other Chrome robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and freedomfiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. And get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android worms.
Yeah, we're back. We're talking about different animals before we hit the break, and then Lisa and I were just talking during the break about the cricket issue. And I have that same issue too. I've told because I talk to different people who are always like they deal with the cicadas wherever they are, and then other people talk about the crickets. I'm like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I have both. and just like you said, they it seems like they disappear and then they come back again. It's like, no, they're just changing places. It's just like it's constant though. There's always one of them. Sometimes they battle for supremacy. Like, as the cicada season is dying, you find all the which is weird though. I hear them all the time, but I don't see them as much as I used to. I remember growing up when I used to come up here and visit. Because my whole family's from here, so when I grew up in Pennsylvania, we used to come up here a lot to visit the family and stuff. And I remember being at my grandmother's house all the time and seeing the exoskeletons of the cicadas everywhere. Ugh, like they would just cover her lawn. but you don't see them anymore, which is weird, but I still hear the darn things.
Ew. Yeah, I thought it was cicadas here for a couple of, it was like 4 weeks straight every night, like 12 hours. I swear it was like 10 p.m. to 10 a.m., just the chirping nonstop. And it was torture. And so I have a sleep app. I have a sleep machine. I bought earplugs, everything. And like, that's like they're right outside of my bedroom window. And then it stopped. One night it was just gone. And I was so happy. And that lasted a couple of weeks. And then again, I hear the noise. And then I thought, maybe these aren't cicadas. That's because it's kind of weird timing for them. So I was on YouTube looking up insect sounds. I'm like, cricket? Katydid? Cicada? What is it? And it turns out, I'm pretty sure it's crickets trilling. And my daughter's like, isn't that like their mating call? And I'm like, this is already disturbing enough. We don't need to talk about why they're doing this right outside of my window. But then sure enough, before I went out of town last week, I was in my bedroom packing and there's this little baby cricket just sitting on the floor in my bedroom in front of my dresser. And I expected to come home after being gone for over a week to a cricket infestation. But so far, nothing. Thank God. But they are so loud, and people think it's funny, and they'll say, oh, you know, I like that sound. It's nature. It helps me sleep. And I say, you don't understand. I'm not being sensitive about, you don't understand how loud.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm talking about here. This is not just like a couple of crickets. It sounds like every cricket in the state is right outside of my window. It's all of them. All the crickets.
Well, yeah, Michael's a great example of that. When the crickets first emerged, during my first summer on the fiends,
I remember.
I was so conscious of it, and I was just like, oh my God, this sound. And Michael's like, oh no, it's great. I love it. You know, he's like, you know, it adds that air, you know, that air of just the natural sounds. He's like, it's great. Leave him in there. It's fine. And then after a couple of weeks, it drove him so insane that he was just like, you got to stop. The crickets. I'm like, I can't, man. I'm like, I have all the windows closed. It's still coming in because it's exactly what you talk about. Just that cascade of them, and it just does not stop.
It's awful.
I mean, it's only because I've managed to learn to tune so many sounds out over the years, you know, starting with my mother and then most of the women in my life. Other annoying sounds I had at jobs that I picked up along the way.
Fair enough. I can't disagree.
I've ended up being able to just block out certain sounds after a while. You know, I used to drive my ex nuts because if for some reason she was out of the house for the night and I was here taking care of the kids and they would cry out in the middle of the night or something, I would hear them in the monitor, on the monitor, and I would go up and get up and take care of them. But when she was here, I could sleep through anything because it was just like I learned to tune them out because in my mind, I was just like, ah, she's here. She's got it.
She's still taking care of it. It's fine. I don't need to.
Well, you know, I mean, in that particular situation, I knew that even if I did wake up to take care of it, because I had tested this theory out, she would still wake up anyway, because it's the mother thing, you know, that mother's instinct. You hear them long before I even register that they're making a sound. Like, you already know that they're she already knew which one was making them. Not even just that a sound was being made. She already knew which one was making the sound and more likely what was the problem before I had even registered in my mind that they were.
Oh,
crying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
we
a
know
mom
five
thing.
Minutes before they're going to exactly. wake up. They're going to wake up.
So I get that. So like, I guess on some level, I was just always like, well, what's the point? Like, even if I wake up and try to run in there so it doesn't disturb her, she's still going to wake up. So what's the sense in both of us losing sleep, right?
That is true. I actually agree. I mean, we're kind of moms, you know, with babies, we can be kind of control freaks. We have to be in there, and I could blame it on the hormones. You know, we have to be in there and it, you know, a part of it and controlling it. And
you're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself. A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon. Your house is your property.
Freedom Beans.
Weren't we talking about hamsters before? I think.
Yeah, that was well, that was two segments ago. We never got back to the hamster story. We both have hamster stories we were going to share, but I think we got distracted by the crickets on the last segment.
We did.
But it's still all animals all the time around here on the Freedom Fiends, which is fitting for me because we're now in September and I'm working on my last month now as I slowly close out my business. And getting away from that, so it's for me, it's fitting that we talk about animals now, because pretty soon I'm not going to be talking about them as much as I normally do.
Oh, no. So do you ever take care of people's hamsters? Is that because you don't sounds like you don't like them?
I hate hamsters with a passion. It's been a long time. There was guinea pigs I did take care of that I actually got paid to take care of. I'm trying to think if I ever did. I think I've, like, maybe once or twice somebody was going out of town and their kid had a hamster in the room. They just go, oh, just make sure it has water and food, which, you know, I'm pretty sure I charged extra for because of my issues with hamsters. But yeah, other small animals and stuff I've definitely taken care of over the years. One client, he used to bring their ferrets to my house back in the day when I still had my ferrets. I would just throw them all in the room together and they'd all play together.
You could tell them apart? Do they have little collars on with name tags?
No, but not, well, just like, you know, most dogs and stuff, they all look a little bit different. You know, at least the American domesticated ferret, which is kind of a mess in general, just because all the inbreeding and stuff, they have a lot of disease problems and stuff. But as far as like looks go, they were made to be kind of like almost designer-ish pets because they created color schemes in them.
Really?
So, yeah, there's like, you know, because most people, if they've ever seen a ferret, it's most likely either you'll see an albino one. Or you see the regular sable ones, which are just the black ones with like the white markings mixed in between and stuff like that. They look more like the, what is it, the polecat? I think they're most closely related to.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a weirder looking mink essentially. But they're all in that type of family. The American ones, they started breeding them so they have all these different colors, like they're champagne ferrets. I can't remember all the names, but there's like a reverse sable. There's the extremely, like, their albinos happen just like they happen in pretty much every other species, but there's actually the extremely even more rare than the albino, the white-furred black-eyed ferret.
Ooh, that sounds exotic looking.
Which I actually had one. So he looked like she looked like an albino, but she had black eyes instead of the red eyes.
Yeah.
So it kind of threw you off.
That's kind of cool. That sounds neat.
Yeah. Yeah, she was great. That was my coconut. She was the one who had brain damage, unfortunately, though, because the previous owner, well, actually, she had been through multiple owners. She was in a house where she was being neglected.
Aww.
So some guy managed to get a hold of her because he felt bad that she was being neglected, but he was a dog and reptile guy and knew basically nothing at all about ferrets.
So he
didn't really know what he was doing, so he actually put her in a worse situation because now he wasn't neglecting her, but he didn't know what to do with her. And he also let his pack of six very large, very angry dogs get a hold of the poor thing on multiple occasions.
That's horrible. What?
Yeah. It was not on purpose, but like the ferret would get out and he wouldn't be able to catch it. And one of the dogs would end up grabbing it. So when I got a hold of her, she had some injuries, not like life threatening or anything, but like, you know, some pretty big gashes in her, you know, nasty gashes in her head, stuff like that. But she had definitely been rattled by all of that. So there was something off about her, And it was weird with a ferret, because with ferrets, it's like, well, how do you know? Because if you've ever seen ferrets play, people think they're trying to kill each other if you don't know what you're looking at, because they play rough. Like, they bite each other. They drag each other across the floor.
Gosh.
You know, but that's how they play. They're very excitable, very extremely social creatures. They love to be around each other. They love to be around people. That's just the way they are. They're very social. And they're very playful. How would you know? But it wasn't me who figured it out. It was my other ferrets who tipped me off, because they all tried to kill her when I first introduced them.
Wow. Why? They just thought she's, you know, is that like the mom hamsters eat the babies that are sickly? Like, this ferret, we have to take her down. She's not well.
That's kind of what I was thinking, because all of my other ferrets, and at the time when I got Coconut, I think, gosh, I think I had 7 at that point when I got her. So she was number 8. And the other 6 or 7, whatever it was, were all living in the biggest ferret cage on the market. because I made sure I went out and found that thing way back
an
when.
An entire bedroom in your house.
Actually, when I bought my house, I finally gave them their own room. They had the run of my den in my old place. But yeah, it's one of the smallest rooms in my house. It's like a 10 by 10, an 8 by 10 room or something like that, or a 10 by 10 room. So it's not a very big room at all. But yeah, they got their own bedroom that I actually took one of the extra tall baby gates.
And, that works. And,
well, no, because they can climb those things.
Yeah, or so I'm if thinking they just shimmy right through the holes.
Or yeah, or if they want to, they actually can. Because the one thing about ferrets, for people who don't know, is if anything they can get their head into, they can get their entire body into.
Like a snake.
Pretty much, because their entire their bones are kind of flexible, and they can kind of collapse themselves. So if they can fit their head in, so I had to take one of those extra tall ones, and then I had to fashion it myself with I bought plexiglass, and I actually carved it myself into the shapes of the. I made two giant pieces and cut it just right so it would and glued it in there.
That's
so
a now lot this, of work.
Oh, it was, but it, so now this flimsy little wooden baby gate that normally weighed like barely a pound or two and you could just kind of toss it around was now one heavy piece of equipment because it had two giant. But it kept them in, so I was able to just keep that thing up. Instead of closing the door, I was just able to keep that up all the time. So they had their own room all the time. They could just hang out there. I never had to worry about them. You know, I would just go in and check on them, make sure they had food and water, play with them and stuff. So when I got Coconut, they were all the other ferrets were in this big cage, and I was like, oh, here we go. I'm bringing another one in. And I had brought in, the reason I had so many is because they were like addicting to me. It was like almost like my tattoo problem. When I first started getting tattoos, where I kept wanting to get more and more and more, I just couldn't help it. They were so much fun, and I was just like, and then it was all these horror stories, because like my first ferret I got on my own from the Petco that I was working at the time, and it was like the first shipment of ferrets we got into the brand new store, because we actually helped build the store and open it up. So we have like the very first batch of ferrets in that store. Out of the 6 ferrets that came in, I think 5 of them ended up going to employees. we didn't even let the customers get to them, because we just all fell in love with them, and we were just like, oh, we're gonna take these home. And I ended up with 2 of them, 2 of those 5, because the first one I got, because I had decided which one I wanted to get, and the second one got returned by this sweet little 60-plus-year-old couple who had come all the way out from New York City to come out here to further out onto Long Island, because in New York City there's like a ban on ferrets where they're not allowed to be sold anywhere. You can actually own them, but that you can't sell them there, so people would sometimes come out from the city to buy them. But they had come all the way out, and they were devastated when they came back and I had to return the ferret, because Petco has this 15-day return policy on animals. Because they took the ferret home, and it was actually a situation where they were going through like a second phase of empty nest syndrome, because one of their kids had come back to live with them, and their grandchild had been there, and then like she had grown up and left, so now they were like devastated all over again. They didn't want to get a dog. They decided to get something different. They got a ferret. They fell in love with this little ferret, who they named Stuart, who was a gigantic white, he was an albino. They brought him back because they found out, of all things, this poor woman was allergic to ferrets.
I had no idea that it was a thing.
Neither did any of us. We were all quite baffled, and you know, they were heartbroken because they were just like, they'd fell in love with this little guy.
Aw,
you know, it was this situation where the woman was like, I'm willing to do anything. And the doctor's like, listen, with all the other medications you're on for all your other problems, if we start giving you allergy medicine and stuff like that, it may be a really big problem.
Poor thing.
So, so that's how I ended up with him. And then it just became more like that, I ended up with another one where I went to another store to pick up something, another Petco to pick up something. And the manager was, the manager and I had become friendly because I had helped her out with a project in another store like the year before. And we got to talking, and I saw that they had this one ferret there, and I was asking about her, and they explained that she had been bought in return like over 10 times.
For just various reasons, or is she a problem
almost always, because she was a biter. And you know, I kind of was like, well, of course, this thing's been bought and returned like 10 plus times in like a little over a year. Like, she's been through so many sets of hands. Of course, she doesn't know who to trust. I can't really blame her, you know. And if she was a little skittish to begin with, because ferrets can be, you know, but you just got to spend a little time with them. And like I said, they're social creatures. They're a pet that you really shouldn't get unless you plan on spending at least an hour or two a day with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really need to interact. So, you know, I was like, oh, I understood. And like, the manager of the store was like, listen, if you're willing to take her out of here, I will not only give you the current discount on the ferret, you know, the price that the employees normally aren't supposed to get, I'll add your employee discount to it. She's like, and I'll give you my managerial discount on top of it. You just have to promise that you will never, ever ever bring her back to the store. So that's how I acquired Mischief. And she was a biter. I had to wear rawhide gloves for the first 6 months that I owned her, because not only did she bite and hard, she was the fastest ferret I'd ever seen. Because there's certain ways you can grab them, you know, you scruff them and stuff like that, like a mother cat does to their young, and where they can't really do it. Yeah, even in those positions, she could still manage to turn around so quickly and nail you with a bite.
Ow!
Yeah, she was vicious, but like I said, only for about 6 months, and then slowly I was able to work the gloves out. And at almost a year, there was a video at one point. It got lost, unfortunately, but there was a point almost a year to the day that I got her that there was a video of her walking up to me and giving me a kiss.
After all that sweet. Time.
So, like, yeah, like, after she tried to kill me on multiple occasions, all she needed was a little time. Anyhoodle, we're headed off to the break, and we'll be back and probably talk some more animals before
more
we
ferrets.
Finish out this hour. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent, post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback, and for the first time, on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends-related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Yakking, pun intended, about animals most of this first hour. And you know, Lisa, we still have to get back to your hamster story. I'm just going to quickly finish off because I you know, I don't want to start things I don't finish. You know, teaching hospice, Michael yell at me. The whole reason I got into that whole ferret story was about my one brain dead ferret that my other ferrets told me about. So all the other ferrets I had, including Mischief, the one I was just talking about before the break, the crazy biter, she was the one who actually tipped me off, because, you know, despite how crazy she was, any other time I introduced her to other ferrets, like when I brought new ferrets into the house and friends brought their ferrets over, always wanted to play right away. That's just the way they were. They met Coconut, and immediately Mischief tried to tear her throat out.
Whoa.
I had to physically separate them. And then I realized quickly that all the other ferrets had a very strong disdain for her too. And she didn't do anything to them. She didn't like hiss at them. She didn't like try to attack them. She just stood there, looked at them, and was like, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Coconut."
Whoa, hi.
they're just like, "You have to die now." And then, yeah, between that and my vet, we eventually figured out that, the only likely scenario is that she had some kind of brain damage and from the injuries that she had sustained, which is why she was a little quirky. And the other ferrets recognized that and were essentially like, "Yeah, we need to protect the pack. You can't be here." That's kind of how they looked at it. So
that is interesting, huh?
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting creatures.
I don't think that I've ever met a ferret, but I have met an albino squirrel. In D.C. a couple weeks ago, I was sitting on the mall, and this albino squirrel, I have video of it and a bunch of photos, came over to us, and it was eating French fries. So I thought, well, I have French fries. I can share my fries with an albino squirrel on the mall in D.C. in the District of Criminals. Yeah. So that was...
That's a weird thing to knock off your bucket list.
I know. It's one of those things you don't even know you want it on your bucket list until it happens, and you're like, "This is so cool!" Like, how many people can say they did that? But it drew a crowd. There were all these people standing on the other side of the fence, watching and recording it, recording us, wow, recording the albino squirrel and talking to it and looking like complete lunatics, feeding it spicy French fries. And then I posted it on Facebook, and someone lectured me about it. "You're going to give that that squirrel diabetes and heart disease." It lives in D.C. It eats junk food all the time.
Well,
I was hanging out by the food trucks.
Well, exactly. I mean, I was going to say, when you said the spicy fries, I'm like, my first thought was, okay, that probably wasn't that best for his digestive system. But the fact that he did walk up, the fact that he was eating fries to begin with, and the fact that he walked up to you, like he was willing to walk up to you, means that you didn't cause anything. He's clearly been fed by other humans before, because squirrels are not normally... social in that way with human beings for very good reason. You know, it's the same thing in Central. You see it in Central Park too. It's the same type of thing, where certain sections of the squirrels are a lot friendlier because they're used to being fed.
This little guy was used to, he knew what he was doing, or she. I don't know. I don't know how to tell them apart. I don't know how to tell apart male and female hamsters either, which is how I ended up with like 14 of them at one point. Yeah, I decided it would be good to get the kids hamsters. So three children, three hamsters, right? Put them in the cage together, a couple months later. Come downstairs in the morning, and my son goes, you know, he's like three, "Mommy, why are there baby pigs in the hamster cage?" And I said,
"Baby pigs."
I just, like, this wave of horror washed over me. What? What are you talking about? So I go and I look, and there's all these little, they look like baby pigs in the hamster cage. There were six of them. And it is true that the mother will kill the baby hamsters, because there were not six of them for very long. And I'm looking in the cage, like, did she bury? Is the other one hiding? Where is it? And then it hit me, and I'm like, this is just one horrific thing after another.
Well, you know, it's a learning experience for everybody. What better way to teach the kids about the life cycle and death?
Oh, it gets worse. I will continue after the break. There's more.
Oh, boy. I'm harkening back to it. I don't know if we have ever talked about this on the air, but I think you and I have shared these stories before, because now I'm remembering this and going, oh, wait a minute, this is why it sounds familiar, because this is very much like my my bunny story and my guinea pig story.
Oh, boy. These poor creatures.
Yeah. Darn kids, this is what happens.
Yeah, they ask for pets.
Exactly. All right, so we will head off to the break, and when we get back in the second hour, I think we're going to talk some more animals. This is fun.
Why not? It is fun.
Worms.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Got no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at bipcot.org. So we are back for the second hour. I am Jeremy. Joined tonight by Lisa. And we were talking all about animals in the first hour, and we got rudely interrupted by the market as Lisa was finally getting to the hamster story that we had promised way back in, like, I think the second first segment, maybe. somehow we ended up on ferrets.
I hope the build-up is worth it.
Yeah, so somehow we ended up on ferrets. I don't even know how we got there, but, you know, once I started talking about that, I can't shut up. So, anyway.
I don't remember how either, but... Yeah, I learned a lot tonight about ferrets. Things I didn't know.
as we were heading to the break, you were finally starting to tell the story. And I guess for the people who are just joining us from Sundance and other places, maybe we should just start over at the beginning there with your hamster story of getting hamsters for your children and learning what not to do with them as we would find out.
Oh, yeah. So, learn from my mistakes, please. So, we decided three kids, each of them needed their own hamster, got three hamsters, put them in the cage together. A couple months later, my son, who was like three at the time, comes downstairs and says, why are there baby pigs in the hamster cage? Still funny. 15 years later. So I was obviously terrified to go look and see what he was talking about. And I go, and there's six baby hamsters in there. A day or two later, there were only five baby hamsters in there. So we decided it might be a good idea, now that we are unintentional hamster breeders, to find out how to tell the sexes apart so this doesn't keep happening. So we go back to the pet store with them and ask, you know, they call it sexing them. That sounds gross, but it's, you're telling them apart by the sex. So they explained us how to tell, and we still didn't really understand, apparently, because a couple months later, we thought we'd separated them properly, and we ended up with more baby hamsters. Yeah, some people apparently should just not have hamsters as pets. So we ended up with more baby pigs in the hamster cages, and then one day, like, spring rolls around, and we've got this, like, habit trail hamster cage condo thing going on in the kitchen. And, you know, they're, we think, adequately separated by then, but they had, like, a prison break in the middle of the night. And so we come down in the morning one day, and my son says, "Where are the hamsters?"
Oh, no.
So we went from having, you know, I don't even know how many sets of babies, two or three litters or whatever you call them with hamsters, I don't know, to no hamsters. And so I'm not going to lie, for a few seconds there, part of me was kind of happy, kind of relieved. Oh. And then I felt bad. And then I thought, well, okay. But it was spring, and at least it was warm, and they weren't going to freeze to death somewhere. So we're frantically searching the house looking for these hamsters and couldn't find any of them. They're just gone. So all from one cage. Sorry. We did still have some in the female cage. The males had No, it was the females that had broken out. We still had a couple of males left, but the females were just gone.
Girls' night out.
I know. And so, so a couple of weeks later, I'm outside talking to a neighbor and in my front yard, and he stops talking and does this double take, and he's looking and he goes, Is that a gerbil in your flower bed? And I'm like, oh my God, I bet it is. And I turn around and it's this hamster, and it looks all like feral and wild, and it's got its mouth full of like whatever they put in there. And so the kids are, oh my God, you know, it's one of our hamsters, and they're chasing it around the yard trying to catch it. And one of my daughter's friends caught it and had it in her hands, and it just was not having it. Like it was. It knew what it had tasted freedom, and it did not want to go back into his, yeah, it didn't want to go back with us. So we finally just said, you know what, maybe it's for the best. It seems to have adapted to life on the outside. So we're just going to let it be free. And that was that, and never saw any of them again. Wow. And then we had possums later too, but that's a pretty grisly story. You know, if you have a house that's built on a crawl space and you smell something bad, you know, coming through the wood floor, don't wait as long as I did to find out what it is. It is because, you know, three young kids, we thought somebody had left food somewhere, and we're like looking in the couch cushions, like who left a sandwich somewhere in the furniture? And it turned out that it finally hit me. Something smelled dead under the house. So we had to hire a guy to come out, and you couldn't pay me enough to do that job. So this guy comes out, and I'm like, God, I feel bad for this guy. And no wonder he charges like hundreds of dollars. But he went under the crawl space, and it was a family of possums. So it was a mother possum, and she was dead, and a couple of dead babies and a couple of live babies hanging out in the crawl space. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've
so many animal stories.
Here on Long Island, you know, we don't have basements for the most part, so you're lucky if you have a crawl space. So yeah, I've dealt with stuff like that before. We had issues with raccoons in ours. When animals would die underneath the house, it was usually cats. Because we always had, like, at my grandmother's house, we always had, for some reason, all the neighborhood cats always used to hang out around our yard, and I guess our house was the closest one around that usually had a broken window in the crawl space, so in the winter they could get down there and stuff like that. Although it became a problem like in the spring when my uncle would try to get out there and try to quickly board up the windows or something when the thaw would finally happen.
And
and then somebody would inevitably always get trapped in there. And nobody ever wanted to go down in there because it was mostly a crawl space under the entire house, but there was like one little section under the kitchen where there was actually a stairwell that went downstairs.
That is really creepy.
And it was like a three-quarter high ceiling underneath it. So like, you had to crouch down to get there, but like, you didn't really keep much stuff down there, but that's where like the sump pump went when there was a flooding issue and stuff like that.
Whoa, that's just...
Yeah,
horrible.
Yeah, it was the stairs there was a doorway in my grandmother's hallway that I remember growing up as kids. It was always like nobody ever wanted to open that door because you're always like nobody had actually ever seen anything like bolt up the stairs and into the house, but there was always that fear that anytime you ever open that door, something down there, whether it be a cat or a raccoon or anything that had managed to get
trapped. Chupacabra or something.
Yeah, whatever got trapped down there during the winter, after, you know, when my uncle decided to, you know, board up or put those little plastic bubble window things over the, you know, over the window holes the next year, you know, whatever managed to get trapped out, it was always like, well, if we open it, what's going to come out today?
Oh, that's like the setup for a horror movie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, but I mean,
Move or burn it down. That's so scary.
Sadly, that house was burned down once.
Oh no, I'm sorry. That's terrible.
And now has been replaced the second time because it got wiped out during Sandy.
Really?
My grandmother still insists on living there.
Is it built on like an ancient Indian graveyard or something? There's a curse.
Most of the country is. is, considering how many genocides occurred. So, you know, I'm sure it's more than possible. But yeah, my family bought that. They've been in that house in a tiny little town on Long Island, which is exclusively a white town when I first moved here back in the mid-90s, which was really freaky to me. I think I've told that story on the show before, coming from a place where I went to a school where there was, you know, 2,000 people in my graduating class, and it was pretty much half and half, black and white. And then I move up to New York, which I'm thinking, oh, you know, more diverse than what we're dealing with down there. And then I come to this little town that's like 99% white. It's like, dude, where'd all the black people go? I found out years later that a bunch of my friends' parents were actually active members of the KKK. And that explained a lot of it. So,
What a time to be alive.
But yeah, but anyway, so my family has lived in that town ever since, I guess they moved out from the city. They lived in Brooklyn, I guess, from maybe the 60s. And they bought that house. And then, less than a decade later, I think it caught fire and burned most of it.
Wow, I think that's a sign.
Yeah, luckily nobody was injured. They all got out. I think all the kids were. Yeah, but I think it was my grandmother and her six kids at that point. My mom and my aunts and uncles and stuff. Because I think it was after my grandfather died that the house burned down. Anyway, but they all managed to get out. Nobody was hurt, thankfully. But they rebuilt and stayed there. And then, you know, it was fine for a while, but then Sandy happened and, you know, there was 4 feet of water in my grandmother's living room.
Oh, that's horrible.
So they had to rip down the, you know, and then we actually almost didn't get her out of there. She refused. I had to drag her out of the house the day of the storm.
Was she Italian?
Yes.
I knew it. Yes. I knew
the
it.
The entire neighborhood had evacuated. And she was just like, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going upstairs down with the house. I'll just go upstairs if I have to. I'm like, nah, and if you go upstairs, you're never coming back down. You realize that, right? I had to go there, like physically drag her out of the house. I'm like this 80-year-old, you know, under 5 foot now, because she's been shrinking ever since she was like 60. So she's like below five. She's like under 5 feet at this point. Like drag her out of the house kicking and screaming, no, Nan, we're going now.
That's going to be my mom. My mom is going to be that way.
But by the time I got her to the car, the water was already halfway up the wheels of my Honda Element. Jeez. I'm like, yeah, and you want to stay? I'm like, look at it. I'm like, when I got here, there wasn't any water in the streets. I'm like, I've been arguing with you for half an hour, and my wheels are already half covered. We're leaving now, woman. I don't care. I'll throw you over my shoulder. Exactly. That was exactly what I said to her. I will throw you over my shoulder if I have to. I really don't want to, but we are leaving right now.
That would be a great time for a journalist to show up and picture the rescues. Like, here's Jeremy with his Nana over his shoulder.
As long as it's a still shot, because if it's a video, they'll hear her kicking and they'll see her kicking and screaming and like
that is awesome.
Cursing me out in Italian.
Did she ever thank you for it? Did she thank you or is she really stubborn?
Kind of.
I would have been fine, Jeremy. Why'd you take me out of my house? But
my grandmother's also the type of person who doesn't say I love you. Which is weird because she's a very loving person and she has a weird problem. Like my sister and my one cousin figured this out years ago, and they would just harass her. Like they would just say, "Nana, I love you," just to make her feel uncomfortable because then she wouldn't
ditto.
Say it. Exactly.
Ditto, if that. That's cute.
All right, we're headed to the market. We shall return. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no first-hand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
parrot does make sounds, actually. They make very interesting sounds. In the ferret community, there actually is such a thing. I think part of it is what's they call it duking. Because it's this weird, like, chirp, like... It's really hard to describe, but
imitate it then.
I'm not even going to attempt that right now. It's been a while. I've been ferretless for quite a few years at this point, so I'm a little rusty. I don't think I'm going to test that on the air.
We'll have to check YouTube later because know everybody's going to do that because I'm going to ferret sounds like I did the crickets and the cicadas and now it'll be the ferrets. I'm starting to think that ferrets might be a good pet to alleviate the empty nest thing, or at least I was until you told me about the ferret biting and all the other ferrets trying to. Like the Lord of the Flies, or whatever. Like I said,
that was just because there was something wrong with Coconut. She was a little off. But normally, they play fight, and they're not hurting each other. Like they'll never draw blood. That was the reason I knew that there was something wrong. That there was something definitely wrong with the situation when I introduced poor Coconut to my little gang of ferrets at that point, because blood was drawn. You know, it's like okay, that's not normal, because. You know, like I said, I had introduced them to so many other ferrets. Like people just brought their friends had just brought their ferrets over just to hang out. You know, so it was like
fair play dates.
Yeah, they were just like the first time they met. There was no hostility. It's just it's in their nature to sniff each other out, kind of like dogs do, but then just immediately want to go play because that's what ferrets do most of the time. They're a lot of fun. I'm a huge fan of them, and I always said that, you know, especially after I found out I was going to be a dad, I was always like, you know, maybe one day when my kids get a little older, hopefully I can share with them the stories of, you know, my ferrets and stuff, and maybe they'll be interested in getting one, and then I'll be able to have another one again because, you know, they do take time. That's the other thing. They're a lot of fun, but they're not like a typical cage animal, you know, like a hamster, like we're talking about before, those evil spawns of Satan, or, you know, gerbils or anything like that. But they you know, you can keep them in a cage. Although, like I said, when I don't remember if I said that on the air or we were talking before, but like when I had my ferrets, I had the biggest cage on the market. And when they had their own bedroom, they actually, I never shut the cage door. Like they went in there and slept because they like to sleep in, dark cozy places. So like they had like hammocks hanging all over the place and like these, you know, these basically ferret sleeping bags essentially that you would tie down to the side of the cage. Like that's so they would go in there to sleep, and that's where their food was kept and that's where I had their water bottles and stuff. But for the rest of the time they just wandered around and sometimes tried to use the litter boxes that I left out for them. That is one of the most difficult things with ferrets is you can litter train them. I've known plenty of people who have had their ferrets completely litter trained. Unfortunately, because I always had such an influx of ferrets because I was always rescuing these or taking these, you know, wayward creatures in that nobody wanted or had these horrible stories like Mischief, who had been bought and returned all those times because he was a biter.
A little Mischief.
You know, and all the other ones, you know, like, you know, Brain Dead Coconut and, you know, all the, you know, plenty of the other ones I got were just like people would call me up and they were just like, oh, I have this ferret and I just pretty much like I have no time for it. Pretty much like letting me know that they were planning on neglecting it even more so.
Leave it in the woods if you don't take it.
That's a whole other story, but that's how I ended up with my Daegu, which people will probably have to look up. I had to look up when I got it because I had never heard of the gosh darn thing. I knew what a Daegu was, which was a kind of lizard, but I was like, what the heck is a Daegu? But that's something you should, if people don't know what that is, you should look that up. Those things are cute as heck. They kind of look like little mini gerbils, but
they look like a chinchilla.
Yeah, yeah, but like with the gerbil tail and stuff.
Yeah, they're cute. Because I remember those. I remember you talking about them, and I had to Google because I had no idea.
Yeah, so that's.
I mean, is that related to a chinchilla? I mean, same family or?
I don't think so. I think they're native desert creatures, if I remember correctly. I want to say like southwest United States is sticking in my mind for some reason, which would make sense for the desert. They're soft like chinchillas. That's how I ended up with that little thing was through somebody who's basically like who said their mom found it, said they needed to get rid of it, and if she didn't find a home for it, she was just gonna let it loose in the streets of New York City. And I was just like, oh, you
can't do that.
No. So
no way.
We'll be back after this trip to the market. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends. An invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Freedom Fiends.
I still say you need to add the ferret sound to the sound effects repertoire here.
Yeah.
Maybe the Daegu. Does a Daegu make noise?
Yes, actually, yeah. We mentioned my Daegu before, and you're asking me questions about that off the air. I'll answer that one first, and then we'll get to that other question you asked me. Yes, the Daegus actually do make noise. They make a chirping sound as well. The ferrets can be more like not a clucking sound, but like a, you know, like kind of like a more guttural sound mixed in with this chirping, like hyper, because they're very hyper and stuff like that. But the Daegus just make these different chirps, but they actually, what I learned after, you know, because again, I knew nothing about these creatures when I first got my little one, which, you know, like I had mentioned, was basically because my cousin's friend bought one, brought it home to her apartment, hid it from her mom for like a month or so. Then her mom found it and was like, you need to get rid of that thing. And, you know, she tried to plead with her mom, and her mom was just basically, you need to find somebody to take it, or I'm just going to let, you know, I'm just going to dump it out in the street. Which is how I ended up with the little thing. And I learned after, you know, first when my cousin called me and was like, Daegu, I'm like, all right, I'll call you back in a little bit. And I ran to Google, and I'm like, what is a Daegu? I'm like, okay, I'm an animal guy. I've worked at, like, you know, I've worked in animal hospitals. I've worked in kennels. I've worked in veterinary offices. I've dealt with exotic creatures. I'm like, I've never even heard of this thing. So I had to go look it up. And then once I saw a picture of it, I'm like, oh, she's, you know, they're cute. I'll give it a home for a while. And, you know, then once I got her, I had to learn all these things about her, especially when she started making all these noises. And I was like, I thought she was upset or, you know, she was mad or something. And apparently they've, like, according to the research that's been done, they've come up with, like, they have different pitches with the squeaks and the squeals and the chirps that they make.
Mm-hmm.
That they actually do have a form of communication that is, they're actually like different. They actually, you know, use different pitches to show different things, like happy, excited, all these different things. There was like somewhere between 7 and 10, I think. It was crazy.
Wow, that's cute. Oh, yeah. I kind of want one now.
Yeah, so they're very interesting, but they're another one that you really have to. Well, actually, with most small animals like that, except hamsters, of course, because they are from the devil, and I suggest that nobody ever have one. All the other ones, gerbils and you know, guinea pigs and stuff like that, they're all relatively skittish to start out with. But if you socialize them, if you spend time with them, if you hold them, you know, regularly as they're young, they get used to the human touch, and then they become almost, you know, some of them can become affectionate, but for the most part, they can become like almost affectionate, whether they enjoy, the, you know, they enjoy the closeness with you. So you can hold them, you can hang out with them and stuff like that. And that's, for me, that's when the, those type of animals are fun. Because if you're just going to keep them stuck in a cage all day just to look at them, you know, take them out once a week so you can clean their cage and stuff like that, you know, just throw, no, throw some food and water at them every day, that's like, that's no life for them. And like, what's the point? Honestly.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
You know, so, you know, like I was saying, with ferrets, you have to spend, really have to spend time with them because they're really social. But all these other little ones, you know, I mean, my big thing with hamsters, and I think I have told this story on the show before. I'm recalling an episode with Shane and I where I think I just this in full detail the time that I was bit by multiple hamsters at the same time during the opening of during the opening of one of the Petcos I worked at in a thunderstorm when I, you know, couldn't yell because I was in the middle of giving a lecture to a bunch of families.
Oh, no. And I knew there had to be a story about why you hit them so much.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was even before that, though, I've been bit by so many different animals. I've been bit by fish, okay?
What?
Like, you know, yeah, I've been bit by pretty much anything you can think of in the animal world. So I'm used to that type of thing just because the type of work I've always done and the fact that I've always been around animals and I've always had animals and I've always tried to, you know, seek out animals. So I'm kind of used to that. But hamsters, it's like they just, I don't know, I've had bad experiences.
I guess so. I probably wouldn't like them either if they ganged up on me like that.
Yeah, but even before, like I said, even before that, there's other instances where I've been bitten by them in just different scenarios, and just it's never fun. Never had it happen with a gerbil. Never had it happen with my Daegu. Never had it happen with even when my Daegu ended up being pregnant when I got her, and I didn't realize it. And two months later, she popped out. Yeah, she was pregnant when my cousin's friend had her. She apparently was pregnant, and their gestation period is just long enough that she was able to keep the thing for a little while, transfer it to me for like a month and a half before all of a sudden she popped out six little babies.
Did they look like baby pigs?
Well, no, they actually they had more hair on them at that
six?
Very.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's actually, well, you want to talk about sad stories? You're talking about the possum story.
Oh, no, no. Do they eat their babies too if they're
not well? No. Well, a lot of species will do that. Because I know in the rabbit kingdom, I mean, I have a story about that where it's not the mothers, the dads will. And if you don't, and sometimes they don't even have to be non-healthy. It's just if you don't separate the males after the babies are born, they just may go on a killing spree. Because I had that happen when I was, you know, I was somewhere between the ages of 10 and 12. And my uncle had given us rabbits that he swore were both females. Going back to your talk before earlier about the difficulty sexing certain animals.
Yeah, it's not, you know.
My uncle
it's
had
a science and an art. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because not all of them have, you know, some twigs and berries dangling down that are easy to see.
I was trying to think how to phrase that. And I couldn't.
Well, cats.
That works.
Yeah, I mean, you think small animals are one thing, but even cats are extremely difficult, especially once you've neutered a cat. It's near impossible to tell for the layman to figure out if it's a male or a female. I know this because I had a cat that I was given who was already 10 years old, and I was told was a female, and her name was Bianca, and I called her that for the first year and a half I owned her
until
I took her to a new vet, and the vet was like, "What's your cat's name?" And I said, "Bianca," and he said, "You sure about that?"
That's awesome. Oh my gosh.
And me, who's somebody who'd been around animals for their entire lives, had cat their entire life, and my girlfriend I had just broken up with at the time, who was the one who had gotten me the cat and was a vet tech training to be a veterinarian and had studied this cat. Neither of us noticed that it actually was a male.
The cat's androgynous. Like,
yes.
Wow.
Well, that's why when I finally changed the cat's name, I changed it to Mr. B. But I spelled it like mystery because that's what, you know, we didn't really know when he or she was.
Very clever. Very yes. clever.
Which actually, that's funny because that ties into the original question you had for me before we came back from the break about the name of my Dago, which we were just talking about, which I named Snickers, which is something I normally don't do because when I get animals, if they already have a name, I just keep it. Even if they're an animal like that that doesn't know its name, I'm just like, oh, you've already been called this for however long. Like, why am I going to change your name? That just messed up. You haven't expressed to me that you wish a name change.
Yeah.
So why am I going to mess with something? Snickers was, you know, like I said, with the cat, I kind of had to because I'm like, I'm not going to keep calling it Bianca now because then I'm just going to feel bad because then I'm going
to
feel.
I feel like so weird about that too. We have to, yeah.
But I thought she was a girl named Bianca, I had always called her BZ as a nickname, and I'm like, I'm still going to call you that anyway, so it has to be a B name. But with Snickers, I had to give her a new name because the name that she came with was Shaniqua.
No.
And I was not going to call any animal I ever owned. I just couldn't do it.
Oh, my friend had a rooster and his name was Orwell. And then she bought some chickens and she was kind of trying to figure out the names. And she named one of them LaToya. And
oh, gosh.
What was the other one? Oh, I can't remember. They were both, it was similar to that. And some people got really mad at her about it. It's not funny. And name chickens names like human names. People are so sensitive about everything.
What are you going to name a chicken? Fido?
I mean, come on. Call it, right? I know. Like nuggets? I mean, what are you going to.
Yeah, that'd be even more mean.
Call it. Yeah, it's where it's something sick that my mind went there, but you know, it's late. I adopted a cat and she was a couple of years old and I chose her because I went to the SPCA and I'm like, okay, I'm going to adopt a cat. Let's go see what's up. And I knew I wanted a black cat because I had a black dog and I figured I already have black hair everywhere. Why not get a black cat? And then, you know, which ended up not, it just didn't really matter anyway. Just hair everywhere. But I took a couple of different cats out, you know, to handle them and see how they, if they would at least tolerate me and not try to scratch me to death. So Mimi, this cute long-haired tuxedo cat, I take her out and we're interacting and I put her down and watch her like work the room and see what she would do. And she was going over to the ground level cages and sticking her paw in and stealing food from food dishes. And I was like, she's crap. I have to have this cat. So she's pretty funny. I didn't like the name Mimi, but she seemed to know it. And, you know, like you said earlier, she didn't express that she didn't like the name. Yeah. So I figured it's not my right to change it. Maybe she loves it. So, but I ended up moving here and I couldn't find a place in this area that allowed pets a rental. So I gave her to my friend and she's like always getting into the trash can. And she said, I heard this noise in the kitchen and I went to look and the cat pops up out of the trash can like Oscar the Grouch on Sesame Street. She's funny.
That's awesome.
And then I adopted a dog and his name was already Alex. And I'm like, a border collie. I'm like, you can come up with a better name for a border collie than Alex. My daughter's name is Alexandra. So like we have two Alex. Good thing she doesn't go by Alex. That would have been confusing.
Yes.
For everyone. Yeah. I always heard you shouldn't name a dog anything that has O on the end, like Domino or Oreo. Is that true? Because they think you're saying no, like they hear the O.
I have no. I've never really heard that, but I don't. I mean, I know plenty of people who use those names.
Because I wanted to call him Domino because he was black and white, you know, border collie, and I thought Domino was cute. But people said, no, you can't call him that. But he already knew the name Alex anyway.
Yeah, it's quite easy to get them to get used to answering to a different name. I mean, my last dog, my current dog, Murder Dog, well, she actually answers to Murder Dog now.
She answers
to Murder Dog, Wonder Dog, Wonder Mutt. If you've ever seen the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful... early 80s comedy Summer School with Mark Harmon. That was the name of his dog.
Yes,
Wonder Mark was the name of his dog. So she answers to all those things. So you can change it, but yeah, whatever. Maybe it's just laziness.
Too cute.
I like to claim that I'm doing right by them. Worms.
I'd say you are worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
And we're back for the final segment. We're just going to skip right over redemption because we've been talking animal stories all night anyway. Although we discussed during the break, Michael, if you listen to this, we did talk a little freedom. We talked about the escape of Lisa's hamsters.
They were liberated.
Exactly. We had a freedom segment in there, so that covers us for the night. But this may end up as Lisa pointed out, this may end up making it may end up making things end on a down note. But I do have to get back to one story that we started in the last, I think it was the last segment. Gosh, this whole night is blended together and I have no idea when we talked about it. But I'm trying really hard to finish stories that I start. Again, Michael, if you're listening, see, you've gotten to me that, you've gotten to me that much. It's pounded into my head. I'm trying to remember these things. But I started to tell the story of what happened with my Deku Snickers. And we got sidetracked by the name conversation. Apparently the gestation period of a Daegu is just long enough that my cousin's friend was able to bring it home from the pet store, keep it for 3 to 4 weeks, give it to me, and another month and a half went by before all of a sudden I woke up to find little furry, little fur balls all over the cage. And unfortunately, the cage I had her in was one of my small backup ferret cages, which was perfect for her because she was, over a year old at that point, because apparently they don't have to be very old at all to start reproducing. I think Daegus are actually able to start reproducing at like 6 months old, ridiculous like that. They live like 5 to 7 years.
Mm.
But they can... they can start reproducing. They start reproducing really early, so it was good for her because she was pretty much full. She was full size. Unfortunately, her babies were not. So the horizontal bar setup for a ferret cage,
oh, no.
Not very good for these little guys because they could just walk right out of it. like the bars weren't even there. So I was constantly having to corral these little things, and then I had to rig the cage with some chicken wire to finally get him to stay. Unfortunately, before I finally was able to figure out what the problem was and secure everything, a couple of them had made it over near the ferret cage. And the ferrets didn't try to kill them by hurting them. They essentially did what cats would do with mice.
Oh no! Play with them to death. Oh god!
A couple of them made it. Didn't make it that way. They ended up that way. A couple of them, even though I kept them with their mother and tried to make sure they were warm and everything, just didn't. Didn't survive the elements, I guess, even though we were inside. It was weird. I obviously didn't have much knowledge about what to do with baby Daegus. I mean, I read as much as I could. I was constantly trying, I was asking questions. But everything was just happening so fast, and I already had this was way back when my business had just started. So I was in my second year of my business, which was to this date my largest money making year. So I was just swamped with work. I already had 7 ferrets, and I was helping take care of my then roommate's snake, which I later ended up. In the court case, and her two cats who were staying here. So to say I was a little busy would be an understatement. But I was trying to do my best to try to keep
Dr. Doolittle.
Yes, I was trying to do my best to keep the remaining Daegus alive. And then, unfortunately, the last time one of them escaped. And this is of course the saddest one. And but you know, I've already went this far. I'm gonna have to tell it. Managed to get out and make her way over to a relatively large bucket compared to the size that she was. That I didn't think she could get anywhere close to it. That I kept in that room for my ferrets as a dunk tank because they like to duck their heads underwater. So if you put like balls and stuff like that, and they would chase the balls and like you know kind of like almost like little otters and stuff like that. She managed to crawl herself in. Well, I say she. I don't actually know. Going back to that whole sexing conversation. the poor thing fell in there overnight, and obviously I couldn't, you know, I wasn't there. And
poor thing.
Yeah, and that was the last of them. So none of the six of them survived. But yeah, it's when you don't know, either if you haven't sexed your animals properly or you're given animals that are already pregnant, it can be tough, man.
Lessons learned tonight.
Exactly. You never know what to do in these situations.
Oh my goodness, what not to do.
Yes. If you ever have a Daegu, make sure that you always have it prepared for little ones. Don't keep any water. Kind of like gremlins. Just keep the water away from you.
Oh, poor things.
Any hoodle. Well, other than the sad part, this has been a lot of fun, Lisa. I'm glad we finally able to make it on tonight.
It's fun. Who would have thought I would get to talk about little critters? Good times.
Yes. So, all right. So thank you, everybody, for listening. For more of us, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms.